Welcome to the MS Dev Show, episode number 155. We're finally done with the pre-records, and this week we talk with Paul Thorod about his thoughts on Microsoft. We solve part of the uppercase-lowercase mystery. And apparently SWAG is an acronym.
This episode of the MS Dev Show is brought to you by Espose, the market leader of .NET and Java APIs for file business formats. Natively work with DocX, XSLX, PPT, PDF, MSG, MPP, image formats, and many more.
This week we have Paul Thorod, longtime tech journalist covering Microsoft. It can be heard on Windows Weekly. How's it going, Paul?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Very good. Very good. Carl, what do we have for the comment of the week?
The comment of the week, we have somebody from Twitter reached out to us, Neil Hiley, contacting us to try to get on our Slack because he was having problems with the Slack signup page, which should be resolved now. So you can go to slack.msdevshow.com to sign up for our Slack, and you can talk to Jason, myself, and then a few other people who have signed up there as well. And we look forward to talking to you. And for this comment, Neil wins a developer small business license for Espose.total for .NET, which includes all of the Espose.net products in one package. And if you want to get mentioned on the show like Neil and win this package, send us an email to feedback@msdevshow.com, comment on Facebook, YouTube, or Stitcher. We really like these five-star iTunes reviews as well.
Just so I understand, something was broken on our end?
There was something like, it wasn't really on our end, but it was on Slack side on their back end where they had a problem in there and he just couldn't get on.
But it's all good now. Okay.
It's all good now.
Yeah. Just, you know, troubleshooting tip number one, just, you know, try it again, turn it off, turn it back on again. So sounds good. Okay. What do we got for the news, Carl? A day in the life of Americans.
So I think this is one that all three of us are really interested in because we're all remote workers. Mm-hmm. And there was a really cool infographic, kind of a couple of paragraphs down into this page that kind of showed the data being visualized as the time flows throughout the day, where you spend it. And they put it in categories such as sleeping, eating, work, travel, leisure, religion, phone calls, and a few other things too. Mm-hmm. It was really interesting seeing as the time goes, like how many little dots or percentage of the population are in these different areas. And you can see the numbers going up and down.
I would expect a Facebook category. I don't see that on here.
Right. And like all sitting in front of computer.
Yeah. Now the coolest part about this, I think, is this visualization where you can, like the little balls that represent people are kind of flying around. I push fast on that. And I just want that to be like my screensaver. That's so cool.
Yeah, it is really cool.
As you look throughout the day.
Especially as you look at this, if you looked at like the bottom right quadrant is kind of like things that you want to have in balance, like education, personal care, sleeping. You want to do as much of those to like fulfill yourself.
Right.
But then like the bottom left is like stuff like work and housework and stuff like that. It's like you really want to minimize that stuff. Whereas once you get on the upper portions, those are things you want to do or choose to do. So, you know, it's also looking at this, you know, where do people spend their time versus kind of where do you want to be spending your time?
Yep.
And the site was depressing, too, because I ended up scrolling down, unfortunately, and there was a link to when you're going to die. And and the visualization was really cool. So I was really excited about it, but it started showing like, you know, possible time, you know, dates that I was going to die. And like, for whatever reason, like they all started going in the buckets. It was like 0 to 9 years from now. And I'm like, no, I mean, it was at 10% because I guess it does, you know, it's random, but across a distribution. So while I was mesmerized by the visualization, I was a little depressed by that. But if you wait long enough, it finally distributes evenly. But still, it was a little bit depressing. Yeah, here we go. Years you probably have left.
I'm looking at it too.
Probably it's the present.
It really, aside from the fact that we've all crested, the rest of life is apparently that part of the roller coaster where you go over the top and it gets really scary.
I'm past the fun part of the roller coaster. And now it's just going to my doom. So anybody who visits Carl's link there in the show notes, just don't click the other link. Just a little pro tip for you. And then the next news story actually isn't even a story, right, Carl? It's just a picture.
Yeah, it's just a picture. So, I mean, we always hear like, you know, uppercase and lowercase letters. Yeah. And sometimes, you know, you forget about the etymology of where these things come from. But this is a picture of a printer's case that where they held their letters. And the bottom portion were all what we call the lowercase letters. And then the topper portion was the uppercase letters.
Yeah,
I was just blown away. I mean, as much as it makes sense, you know, you forget some of the history that comes with this and the legacy that where our language comes from.
Actually, now that I think about it. So what did they call it before the cases? Right. Because there would have been like upper and lower. Right. Like obviously the box was invented to hold the keys that form to the fact that there's two sets of letters. So that's the part I'm a little confused about. So a little bit of research for you, Carl, and we'll talk about that on the next episode. But yeah, this is
probably not going to happen.
Yeah. But still the uppercase and lowercase. Yeah. I never really thought about it. You know, you always use these things and it's kind of funny too. Whenever I talk to my kids and you talk about, you know, let's rewind that or, you know, those types of things, or even footage, you know, let's get some footage, you know, they have no clue where that stuff came from. But we just use it as if everybody knows. Okay. This next one's a fun one. HTTPS on Stack Overflow.
Yeah. So, we've had Nick Craver on the show before and he's the author of this article. Awesome. And, in the past, people have, you know, wondered why hasn't Stack Overflow like forced HTTPS, you know, for a variety of the good reasons. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, just put a certificate on there and, you know, they've gone through over 4 years of this process getting to here. And this is a pretty epic blog post. I think there's like 11,000 words or something like that. So it'll take you time to get through it. But if you want to know exactly what they had to do all along the way for a site as big as Stack Overflow with all the subdomains that they have, and not just subdomains, but tertiary domains, and all of the changes that they had to do to support not just HTTPS, but, you know, TLS2 and all of that stuff. You'll find all of the details in here.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting. And, you know, if there might be a case that you're working on some sort of site where you haven't thought of some of these edge cases. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely worth a look to see what they had to do because they pretty much had to do everything.
Yeah. This was unbelievably complex.
They weren't just procrastinating.
No.
No. And I did just check therot.com. It is secure.
When we started the site, that was one of the big decisions. And actually it was hard to do for a brand new site.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of things you have to work around.
Yeah.
But it was the right thing to do, obviously.
Yeah. And the thing is like we did it on the MS Dev show and like it took a couple hours, but like that was a couple hours that we could have done something else. Right. I mean, we just,
you'll never get that time.
Yeah. We won't get that time back, you know, just to have like the S there. Sure. But you know, part of it was now like Google deprioritizes, you know, non-secure sites. And, so we wanted to be on the HTTPS bandwagon. Plus, you know, all the smart people say it's the right thing to do. So, we are in the cool kids club, at least from that perspective. And then what is swag, Carl?
Swag. I thought that meant like free stuff you get at conferences, but this is actually a term in his article. Yeah, there's actually a Wikipedia page that's a scientific wild ass guess. That's
awesome.
So I make swags all day long.
Yeah.
They're really dumbing down science, right? This is like hypothesis is what you're saying. Yeah. In other words.
Yes.
I wonder if there's
when you don't want to go through all that effort.
You can go to what? Simple?
It's a hypothesis without the scientific method attached to it.
I'm kind of curious here. Oh, they don't have it. So there's, you know, there's, if you want like the dumbed down version, since you spoke of it on Wikipedia, you can do simple.wikipedia.org.
Oh, yikes.
They don't have that one yet. Yeah. Did you
know
that?
It's like all one syllable words.
No, they're just, I think it's like, explain it like just I'm five.
Emoticons.
Basically. Yeah. Yeah. Just, there's just pictures, a little pictures. There's a cartoon.
We shouldn't be laughing at this. This is where the world's heading.
Yeah.
You know.
That's true. They'll start to make, you know, it'll be HTTPS, but you know, the simple version will be primary. Exactly. Microsoft's looking to reboot mobile. Oh, look at this. Mobile with new software and hardware. Who's this guy?
He seems to be talking
with authority here.
Well, actually, that was actually Brad who wrote the story, but yeah. Based on multiple sources. The thing that's really interesting about this is since he published that, the two of us have both heard separately from people at Microsoft, you know, on the side mm-hmm. about this. And we haven't been able to pin down what it is, but what it basically boils down to is that Microsoft is, in fact, according to these sources again, going to dramatically increase its investment in hardware. One of the guys who contacted me basically presented it in the form of a bet, you know, like, well, let's talk about this a year from now and we'll see how you feel about this. Because when I first heard this, I thought about Windows Phone and I wrote, you know, that making another phone is silly. Like this would be a terrible waste of resources at this point.
Yeah.
But apparently it's much more involved than that. And, this is all tied back to the thing that everybody says. Google has said this publicly. Steve Jobs famously said this. It dates back to Alan Kay said this, that if you're going to make software, you need to make hardware. And if you're going to make hardware, you need to make software, that these things are part of the same thing. And yeah. Steve Ballmer was on Recode this week and said the same exact thing. Mm-hmm. And so there's a big consensus out there among the people who actually run these big platforms company. That hardware and software are both important. So,
yeah, it's just so difficult to get into that. You know, disclaimer, I do work at Microsoft, but I have no knowledge. I have no idea what they're doing. And
I was implying you for information. Sorry. But you could just confirm part of what I said.
Wink once. No, you're up to stole my eyes open so that there's no, you know, misinformation. No, it's just really tough to get into. So, I mean, you just somebody has to be like super creative in how you would get back into this. Because you're right.
It has to be a new category that we don't know about.
Yeah.
And I think it also has to speak to Microsoft's core market, right? Mm-hmm. It's probably not going to be a consumer device that's sold at Best Buy. It's probably going to be something that goes to the enterprise, right? Yeah. That ties to Microsoft Cloud Services. And so we could literally speculate all day if you want. There's so many permutations of this. It's kind of hard to say, but
yeah. No, I'm on the sit and wait camp. So I just wait for the products to be released and see if it's something I'm interested in buying.
Sure.
So I did have a question for you that I was going to ask you later, mm-hmm. but I guess we could talk about it now. You know, around the hardware. So I'm kind of curious, like what hardware are you using the most these days, you know, as far as like laptop, desktop, phone, like, or, you know, other things like watch, like what are you using these days?
You know how you can tell you love something is if you've had problems with it, but you can't stop using it. It's like it's one of those terrible relationships, you know? Yeah. And so I've been unlucky in a way with my Surface Book, but I love it so much I can't stop using it. You know? And so even today, not today, literally today, but this week, I had kind of a hot bag type experience. It wasn't actually in a bag, but it was sitting here closed and the fan was running. But there's something about it, the screen size and aspect ratio, the resolution, you know, the really high DPI effect, the perfect keyboard. I'm a writer and that stuff is really important to me. And then the precision trackpad. I love it. And so I travel a lot and I find myself reaching for this machine a lot. And so I think that's the one that matters to me most. I mean, the desktop PC I use changes over time. I've been using an HP all-in-one for the past actually several months, probably. It's great. Okay. You know, it's a widescreen, whatever, but
yeah.
But I really, you know, every once in a while you'll hit the Xbox 360 was like that. You know, I sent back a number of Xbox 360 several times because of the red ring of death. Right. But I couldn't wait to get it back. You know, it just kind of worked out that way.
Yeah.
But I would say today that Surface Book is probably the only thing that falls into that category. I mean, there are things I use every day that are fine, but that's the one I can't put my finger on it. I just really, and I think that's why I'm kind of interested in the Surface laptop as well. It has some of the same qualities and I can explain to you why it makes no sense for me to own one, but I still really want one.
Yeah. It's funny. I complain about my Surface Book a lot, but I complain because I love it so much. You know, it's like,
It's worth talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I love the form factor. I love carrying it around. Like you said, the keyboard I think is great. The new Mac Pros with that keyboard that where the keys barely move. Yep. And like, I actually like low profile keys, but the fact that they like sunk them in and it's like, oh, you're not going to catch me. I'm going to go hide down here. You know, and you know, I don't know. I don't know what it is. And maybe if I tried using one for a month, my opinion would change. But every time I go into like a store and I'm like trying it, I'm like, okay, this is like one step away from like typing on glass where I can't feel anything. And I don't like it. Whereas I love the keyboard on here. I don't ever get the hot bag thing. I do get the random, like if I put it in standby and have it unplugged overnight, You know, in the morning, I'm just like, well, it might be dead, or might, you know, might have like drained a whole bunch of battery. Yeah.
You know, I think that's the same. It's probably the same symptom in a way, right?
Yeah.
It's, I think it depends on the system. I mean, some people have these and they have zero problems. Mm-hmm. I have a Surface Book 4 I've never had a problem with. It's fantastic. Yeah. And it's basically the same architecture. It's just that the screen on that device is a little too small for me. There's something about the Surface Book display that I just really like.
Absolutely. Yeah. I would love, I was thinking about this morning, you know, you know, obviously this thing turns into a tablet and mm-hmm. I don't know, I can never get in the habit of like actually detaching and using it. Although like kind of in my mind, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to do that more. I'm going to use it as a tablet more. it doesn't happen. But that being said, I was thinking about this morning. I'm like, you know what I really want? The transformation that I actually want, I want it to have, cause it's only, you can only get them in two cores. And I've noticed, almost across the board, all the small laptops that are around this size and weight are just dual core. And I do a lot of video editing and audio editing, and like there's 90% of the time I'm just browsing a web page and I don't even need two cores. I need like half a core. And then there's other times when
but sometimes you really need that.
Sometimes I really need the horsepower. So I wish it would transform more in that way.
That's an excellent idea. Actually. Yeah. I mean, I, it's funny you mentioned this because I do review laptops and you're right. Most of these things are dual core. Mm-hmm. The Dell XPS 15 is a quad core, by the way, if you're interested in that kind of thing.
Yeah. I was looking at it just for that, but you know, I don't know. I can't at this point,
it's not as good.
Yeah.
It's not as good.
Yeah.
So that's some options. That's a very good idea. I like the transforming hardware thing. It'd be a great way to amp up the mobility aspect of it too. You know, go down to a single core if that is what makes sense while you're on battery power and just watching a movie or whatever.
Yeah. Cause I know it'll sort of do that, but I'm kind of thinking of like how the iPhone works. You know, it's like a quad core and two of the cores are low power and then the other two are high power. And if you stress the high power cores on the iPhone, like your battery just go like, instantly.
Yeah, you can feel it heating up.
Yeah, exactly. But that's fine. Like, you know, I'm usually plugged in if I'm going to do something like that. But I would even be okay activating extra cores only when plugged in or something to that effect. Because I have a 15-inch MacBook Pro that I use Final Cut on. It's a quad core, and I can drain the battery in 1 hour.
Yep.
If I'm just browsing web pages. Video. Yeah. And if I'm browsing web pages and I turn the brightness on, I can get over 10 hours. Like that's how dramatic the difference is.
Do you think a dual core CPU with a really good GPU would do it for video? Would that be good?
I don't think so. Maybe. I don't know how optimized the software
is. Yeah, I don't either. But if that's possible, like a modern computer with a USB-C Thunderbolt 3 port might work because you could plug in an external GPU. Mm-hmm. So if you were docked or whatever, you could actually make it more powerful that way.
Well, I have a question for you, and I apologize for making you my tech support, even though I work at Microsoft, but on the Surface Book.
No, the tables have turned. Please. Yeah.
So the Surface Book, do you have the one with the GPU and the keyboard?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Does it ever use the GPU? And if so, how do you know?
Yep. There's no way to know live.
okay.
But by default, so it's an NVIDIA GPU and there's actually NVIDIA software. So you can even, you can go into a control panel and say never use it or specifically use it for these apps or don't use it for these apps. I don't know of a way to see that live. The way it's supposed to work is what you're describing with the core situation where it just does it automatically. Right. Yeah. And so I suppose I'm just going to make this up. I actually don't know how it works, but if you're browsing around a text-based website, maybe just using the CPU for that kind of stuff. I'm sure there's some GPU rendering of text, whatever. But if there's a video on that page or something, maybe it kicks the GPU will kick in for that, sparing the CPU and helping the battery life. I'm just, again, making this up. Yeah. I don't know, but it's automatic, you know?
Yeah.
And,
aside from the stuff, magic, there's mystery.
Yes. Right. So it's the magic of software.
Yeah. So I was just kind of curious because it's funny. Like I don't know if I could live without the GPU because I don't know when I'm using it.
Well, you could on a Surface Book, it's easy to test because you can just detach the screen.
That's true.
And once you do that, you don't have the GPU.
Yeah. Cause on the Macs, like there was a third party utility that you used to be able to use where you could set up cool rules. Like when you're plugged in, use the GPU for everything. When you're unplugged, use the power saving, you know, Intel chipset.
I could look at it. I mean, there is an NVIDIA control panel for this purpose. So it may in fact do what you just described.
I've spent quite a bit of time in there for a while. What I did for a while is I just told it to always use the NVIDIA GPU for everything, like all the time. And I couldn't really tell a difference, but you know, I'm not gaming on here either. Like the GPU could be like totally lost on me.
The GPU in the Surface Book is kind of a mixed bag because it's really not good enough to do effective gaming, like really good high-end gaming. Yeah. It seems to be more aimed for productivity tasks. And so, you know, I don't know how Excel takes advantage of a GPU. I think that it does. I'm sure some of the graphical effects in, say, PowerPoint probably do as well.
Yeah.
But it seems to be aimed at that kind of workload, not, you know, even video is probably not all that advantageous on this.
Right. So anyway, so while we have you here, instead of asking these kind of, you know, tech okay. support, you know, Microsoft asking tech support questions of you, I kind of wanted to talk about, you know, a little bit of history and, you know, I'm kind of curious, like when you got started on reporting and Microsoft, cause I remember a long time ago reading, the Win Supersite and reading about, you know, I always read about the next version of Windows and you always had screenshots. I'm like, how is this guy doing? It was just like magical. It was awesome as, you know, from the outside, it was so cool to see. And it always like made me like super excited for what was coming. I actually think like that was better marketing than probably anything that Microsoft was doing at the time for me being a tech guy.
I mean, obviously things have changed, right? So with the internet and Twitter and whatever, I mean, things leak very quickly. Yeah. I've got a guy I work with, Rafael Rivera, who you may know, who got a hold of that build that leaked out of Microsoft by mistake. And he found some features that are coming in the next version of Windows 10. And it's sort of like that level of interest and excitement. But, you know, the other thing from the 1990s, you got to remember, we didn't have mobile devices. We didn't have phones, tablets, whatever. We didn't really have the internet the way we have it today. And, you know, Windows and PCs were the center of everything we did. And so Windows had a much bigger impact on all of this stuff. And it was very, very exciting. And, you know, Microsoft, they've never really let off the pedal. But, I mean, they were pushing very much at that time to advance the state of the art. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot going on. It was really cool.
Because Microsoft like was the world. I mean, that's just that's the way it was.
So, well, I mean, covering tech, you know, what do you want to do? You want personal computing is Microsoft. You know, it was kind of in mid-1990s, it was an obvious decision.
Yeah. So when did this all start? Did you start reporting on Microsoft in the 90s then?
Yeah. Okay. It's a little convoluted, but it's one of those thing happened kind of things. But I had gone back to school to actually become a software developer. And after being in banking for several years, and I was living in Arizona, and I ended up working at the computer lab at the community college I was going to, managing a Novell NetWare lab. And I was talking a lot with the professors who were in the CSE and the CIS departments. And I was kind of struck by how many of them were kind of old fashioned and didn't understand what was going on in the industry. It was a lot of VAX-based stuff and old school networking. And so I started writing emails to the group of them because we had different mailing lists internally and saying, hey, this is something that's happening. You know, maybe it was in InfoWorld or at the time PC Week. And I'd kind of quote a little bit from the story and then say, this is why you need to know about this. You know, this is the important thing. And some of them came back to me and said, hey, this is really useful. Do you mind if we give it to our students? You know, and I said, sure, that's fine. And it kind of became a mailing list, a newsletter kind of thing. And eventually, the students who were getting the newsletter would say, hey, this is really useful. I have a friend who doesn't come to the school. Could he subscribe to this? You know, it sort of went from there. And so that was probably 1994-ish, somewhere in that time frame.
That's awesome though. I had no idea. That's really cool.
But what's interesting about it in a way is that at that time, what I was doing was basically what is blogging, right? Someone else has written original content and I have quoted from it, basically stolen it. And I've added value on it, hopefully in some way, which I did at the time. But, when I kind of on the side to this, I started writing books because of one of these professors, and they were actually mostly developer related books, aimed at the education market, and, ended up leaving that job and school to go work for a startup in San Francisco area that was run by a guy who used to be at the company that was publishing the books. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, we can't republish what these other people wrote, that you're stealing their work. They're going to sue us. He said, you have to write the news stories.
Yeah.
And in 1996, when that happened, that was a horrifying thought that I would have to do that much work. And I just couldn't even understand how that could be possible, but I did. And, you know, 20 whatever years later, Here we are. Cool.
So was the newsletter called The Therot, and then somebody came up to you and they're like, no, just Therot.
No, actually it was called WinInfo because it was mostly Windows related. I can't remember the names of some of these, but I had little goofy other newsletters that was like Game Info and that would, because a lot of the stuff was just informal. It was between different groups of people who are my friends.
Yeah.
You know, we used to take over the lab on weekends and play Doom up on the big screen with the projector and, you know, we used to share information about whatever. And, but that was WinInfo, and I did WinInfo, through the school on my own with, along with Wugnet in the late 1990s. And then, brought it to what became Penton, which was Windows IT Pro, Windows NT Mag. Actually, when I started, it was still Windows NT Mag very briefly. And then when I left the Supersite, I left that behind. And so I still publish something on Fridays that goes out. Well, actually, there's a newsletter, but it's not exactly the same, but sort of.
That's still really cool. Very cool.
It's convoluted to saying it out loud. Sorry. No.
Yeah, but I think as somebody who's listened to you and read your newer stuff, because I wasn't in tech that early on, you know, it's interesting hearing that progression and how it's moved to the current day. So, I mean, lately you've really been focusing a lot on the consumer side of Microsoft technology.
Right.
Like, you know, if all of a sudden Microsoft did something and you just kind of threw up your arms and say, that's it. would you quit the journalism side? Would you quit the Microsoft side? Would you do anything technical? I mean,
right. I don't know. You know, I went back to school to become a developer. And if you accept the fact that someone who has sold a painting is a professional painter or artist, I guess I am technically a professional developer.
We'll take it. That counts.
Right. I mean, but this is, we're talking 20 years ago. Yeah. So, I always thought that was going to be the main aim of what I did. And of course, life takes you in these different directions. I'm still super interested in that aspect of things. And I still spend a lot of time, my own time, learning, using Visual Studio, learning C#, learning Xamarin lately. I spent a year learning Android development and not killing myself, which I consider to be a huge accomplishment. Mm-hmm. That's one thing I would be interested in, if things fell apart. I did make a joke recently, although it wasn't really that much of a joke, but you know, Microsoft seems to be making this transition to the cloud. I think that when I look at the company, you see all these different businesses. It's certainly a diverse company that does a lot of different things, but if you had to pick that one focus and maybe where it's leading, it's probably cloud services. Mm-hmm. And honestly, when you talk about things like Azure, especially, I don't mean to say it's not interesting at all, because of course it's incredible and it's an awesome business, but for me personally, it's not super interesting. Mm-hmm. And so if Microsoft becomes the Azure company, that might be the day I retire. I mean, I'm not, you know, so I'll kind of cling on to the part that I have, you know, because I really do still care very much about the client, especially Windows, obviously, specifically, but also any of that stuff. I like the consumer services that Microsoft does for the most part. And I use all of them all the time. I mean, I'm very much in it, but you know, like we were saying earlier, the world's changing. I mean, there are mobile phones that are based on Android. There are iPhones. There are services from companies like Google, many of which are actually very good, as much as it pains me to say. So there's a whole world out there, but I have major problems with a lot of these other companies that I don't have with Microsoft. And the one thing I have clung to literally is this notion that Microsoft has always been very upfront about what it does. It sells you this thing and you pay for it. That's the equation. It's very honest to me. Mm-hmm. Google sells advertising and they sell your personal information and they make some good stuff.
They're in
the
dark alley, like it's free. Don't worry about it, man.
You have to kind of keep that in mind. And then Apple, there's kind of a hubris thing over there. I'm not a big fan of. They make great hardware. There's no doubt about it. I think most of their software and services are not great, but they do make great hardware, and that makes it hard because I kind of want to hate them, but you know, the devices are pretty good for the most part.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the questions that I wanted to ask you actually was in regards to Apple, because I always have this opinion, and people, you know, I think it's a little controversial, but do you see Apple and Microsoft as competitors? I know that there's always this knee jerk reaction because of the history, but like today, do you see them as competitors?
If you were to, you know, somehow divide all of Microsoft's businesses into a grid and then put Apple's businesses next to the ones that made sense, right? There's only a little bit of overlap. Right?
I'm not even sure Apple business is plural, right? It's really iPhone.
Well, I mean, Apple is 70% iPhone, right? And then there's a network effect or whatever you want to call it that kind of feeds off of that, where they sell tens of millions of these things every quarter and they have a lot of users. And those guys are paying for other Apple services. They're paying for iCloud storage. They're paying for Apple Music, maybe. Mm-hmm. They're doing these other things. And that's the benefit that Microsoft saw with Windows. It's the same kind of impact. And so it's interesting, but Microsoft doesn't really have a hardware business that lines up with that, right? So the biggest part of Apple's business and the biggest part of Microsoft's business don't have anything to do with each other.
Exactly. Yeah.
So they don't compete directly, right? But there are little parts that do. Apple's MacBook business competes with Microsoft Surface business. Absolutely. Yeah. It also competes with the wider PC ecosystem. And I think the big benefit that Microsoft has over Apple, other than the fact that their soul is cleaner, is that the things
give
that
away Microsoft, with words, Paul.
The things that Microsoft does benefits an ecosystem of partners, right? So if a particular Surface device is copied by a bunch of PC makers, which has happened, right, with the Surface Pro, it's still kind of a net win for the ecosystem, right? So Microsoft will sell this device maybe at a premium. And then HP and Lenovo and Asus and Acer and everybody else will come along and sell a version that's a little cheaper. And that's great for everybody, because if you really want to buy that device but can't afford it, you have these other choices. Do those two things really compete? I mean, they do, but, you know, they're such different companies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what I always thought too, you know, if you buy a PC and, you know, from Dell, and I buy a Mac and I go out there and I subscribe to Office 365 and, I guess that would include, OneDrive. But if I, you know, subscribe to all these different services that Microsoft has, I'm using Azure, I'm using all this other stuff. Like, Microsoft's going to make way more money off of that MacBook sale.
Yeah. Yeah. This is for people who have been around a long time and follow Microsoft and care about Microsoft. This is the hardest psychological part, right? Because we tend to think of when I say we, I mean literally me and people like me, like middle-aged idiots, you know, who think of Microsoft as the be-all, end-all. It's a hard thing to kind of let go of. You know, Microsoft is the company that makes the platform that runs on all of the things that I use. And that's no longer true, although as a writer and someone who's focused on the Microsoft space, I literally do spend more time using Microsoft products than other companies' products. But this thing that they're doing, this cross-platform mobile strategy, is smart, and it's got a future, and it's going to work. And we need to let go of that kind of partisan weirdness and just, I mean, we want Microsoft to be successful, right? So it should be okay. Mm-hmm. If you choose to use a Mac, and you can use Office 2016 on a Mac, and you can use Microsoft services, you can use Visual Studio for Mac now and become a developer that creates mobile apps that use Azure on the back end. I mean, that's incredible. What a great world that is. It's so much better than it was 20 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. You know? So I think you're up to speed.
So, you know, I kind of want to take that thought a little bit further, because we had just wound down all of our interviews that we did for Build, and you were at Build as well. And obviously, you know, a very astute Microsoft observer. Well, what would you say that was the most exciting thing that you took away from their Build announcements, or was there something else that was more interesting?
So I will admit to a certain amount of bias because I do skew my worldview a little bit toward Windows, maybe in a way that's unfair, you know, because
it was day two now. I mean, it was pushed.
Of course. And I did that just to, you know, to keep me busy. You know, don't leave on day two.
I can confirm that.
Yeah, it's okay. Every year there's something really surprising that happens at Build, like something you don't anticipate, something that hasn't leaked. And a couple of years ago, for example, I had gotten wind of this notion that Microsoft was going to allow Android apps to run on Windows Phone at the time. They announced something like that. This was the Android bridge that they later ended up canceling. But they had these other bridges, you know, and some of them are actually have had profound impacts, I think, on the way things have evolved since then. Like the desktop bridge is like this incredible utility that just has changed the landscape for Windows Store apps, I think. This year, the announcement that was like that was the four Windows 10 features that made mobile better, and not Windows Mobile, but Android and iOS. And it was such, and I write these editorials where I sort of think through what I think Microsoft is doing. And they're always like, in my opinion, kind of thing. I went back to them again and again, and I said, I just want to be really clear that you're saying this, right? You're explicitly saying that you're doing this and that you've changed the strategy for Windows 10. And every time it was like, yeah, that's exactly what we're saying. Mm-hmm. This is a big deal. You know, most people use Windows on computers. Most people use something else on mobile. Microsoft is the only company working to make those things work better together.
Yeah.
And I find that to be incredible because the tools that, you know, Google will provide or Apple will provide to interoperate with a PC today are tools designed to get your data off of that thing and onto something else.
Yeah.
That's not the way people work. And I don't know that it's going to be successful. I just think it's incredible. Mm-hmm. Cross-platform copy and paste.
Yep.
That's crazy. Cross-platform and notifications and the ability to text and phone call and so forth is really exciting. Apple can do that within their own ecosystem. Google could do it within their own ecosystem. I don't even think they're doing that, but Microsoft is trying to do it across platform.
Yeah.
I just think that's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely the most open. Yeah. Cause yeah, you know, I use an iPhone and I just kind of accept that, you know, Apple is just, they're not going to play nice with anybody unless their hand is forced, you know? There's things that are super frustrating for me on there. But it's just the lesser of multiple evils at this point.
Sure. Sure.
So, I mean, you also have a deep insight into Microsoft as a whole. Like you said, you've done a lot of thinking, projecting what they might be doing. You know, what do you think that right now with their current strategies that you see that they're doing right or maybe wrong?
I honestly, broad strokes, I think they're doing everything right. You know, and I know that sounds like a little like a cheerleading statement, but
yeah,
it's not intended like that. What I mean is, Microsoft had this dominant computing platform and it built all these other businesses that kind of evolved off of it, server, Office, and so on. And they created this incredible ecosystem of stuff. And then the world changed. And a lot of companies have a hard time adapting to that change. If you think about the iPhone appearing in 2007 and the companies that were dominant at the time, like BlackBerry, which was RIM, or Nokia or Motorola or Palm, either do not exist today or are completely different companies that are just a shadow of their former selves. Mm-hmm. Those companies only did mobile and they couldn't react to the iPhone threat. Microsoft confronted by the same problem. Obviously they failed as well at mobile. I mean, everyone did. It's mm-hmm. not unique to Microsoft, but they see the world changing and rather than kind of kicking their feet and crying like a baby and saying, no, we're going to keep doing the same stupid thing over and over again because that one thing worked, you know, for 20 years, they've been very realistic about meeting the challenge of this new world, right? And Steve Ballmer called it devices and services. Satya Nadella has called it mobile first cloud, mobile first, cloud first. Mm-hmm. Same concept, you know, this is the reality of the world. And you have to take these kind of baby steps. You know, Microsoft putting Office on the iPad was kind of a big deal at the time. Today, it seems obvious, you know. Microsoft embracing open source was inconceivable 5-10 years ago, certainly. Today, it's obvious. Windows is developed through GitHub, which is an open source project. That's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. The thing that they just announced at Build about the mobile interoperability, you know, unbelievable. So broad strokes, that stuff is all super smart. And it's the type of thing the Microsoft of 20 years ago could not have done. It's the type of thing that most companies today, and I only follow the tech industry, so I can't mm-hmm. talk about like Ford or Maytag or whatever, but you know, tech industry companies really can't do. Apple has had trouble duplicating the success of the iPhone.
Yeah.
Granted, it's a nice big problem to have, you know, they're kind of at the top or they're little crest, but they are kind of a one hit wonder, aren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Google has a lot of services that have 1 billion users. What they don't have are services that generate $1 billion in direct income.
I was going to say it's all advertising. And we should have had that as a news story, Carl. There was this infographic that actually showed, you know, kind of the breakdown of where the money comes from in these companies. And Microsoft was, you know, clearly the most diverse.
Amazon, Google, Apple, Facebook, I think was the other one, were all one hit wonders. And Microsoft is this very diversified company. Yeah. Now that's good. It's a factor of the way the world has changed, by the way, because if we had looked at this in 2000, Microsoft would have been, well, actually, even then, Microsoft probably had at least three major businesses, but I bet Windows was the big one, right? You know, and you could make the argument that the other two at the time were sub-markets of Windows, right? Office would never have been as huge as Office was if it wasn't for Windows or whatever. Yeah.
So I've been at Microsoft coming up on 5 years, and it's kind of interesting because when I started, so I'm in our DX division and, you know, reporting under John Shuchuk, one of our technical fellows. And like at the beginning, whenever we formed this new technical organization underneath there, and it was kind of interesting because he was like, he came in and he was really shaking things up because it was just like, hey, I want to check out all this open source stuff, you know, don't want to be in this Microsoft mindset. Like, let's go look at what's out in the world. And at the time it was kind of small and like, you know, let's be really careful here what we're doing. This feels dangerous. And then over time, now it's just like, we're like so proud of it. And all of us are just like, yep, we're using Azure and guess what? We're running Linux and Kubernetes and, you know, like all these open source projects and we're having a great time. And the partners, like, it's actually kind of amazing that, you know, like how many customers like still aren't getting that message. You know, I'll walk in and, you know, people are shocked, you know, I'm using Chrome instead of Edge and they're just like, what? Yes. Like, you know, they're expecting, they think you have, a Microsoft person has to have all these, you know, like NASCAR logos, like all over their body. But like, man, the just like in just about every group, the changes have been shocking. So it's great.
Yeah. I see it everywhere at Microsoft. You know, I talked to the Visual Studio guys before the launch of 2017 and that's a big story there. They're working with the community to improve the feature set of the product. And it's, you know, languages, compiler, core UI, whatever. It's astonishing. You know, if I had, you know, gone into a coma in 2000 and woken up today, this would be like a crazy science fiction world where everything was backwards. It really is it's amazing how different it is.
Yeah. iTunes in the Windows Store. And
I know
that
I know.
One, I loved it. Cause you guys on Windows Weekly, you made I think it was you that made a comment. You're like, iTunes will never be in the Windows Store. And I actually knew about it. I'm sitting there and I'm like,
well, so yeah, iTunes and Chrome, right? I mean, this is the hell froze over moment.
Yeah.
You know? So that's, that was another great surprise. I mean, honestly, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Espose offers a powerful set of file management APIs with which developers can create applications, which can create, open, edit, and save the majority of popular business file formats. Their product range supports a multitude of file formats, including Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint presentations, PDF documents, OneNote, Outlook, Project, Visio files, popular image formats, and many others. Espose produces APIs for .NET, Java, and the cloud, which can be utilized in almost any modern language available today. Visit www.espose.com for a free 30-day no-limitations trial. And if you get stuck, message the friendly support team for help. All technical support is offered free of charge. Remember, if you're a lucky winner, you will receive a free developer small business license for espose.words for .NET, a powerful toolkit to work with Word documents in your applications.
So rumor is that I'm going to be replacing Satya next week. So I'll be the new CEO of Microsoft. Yeah. So, I was just, since I have you here, I wanted to hear what your top three wishes were so that I can make sure, you know,
top three wishes for Microsoft.
Yeah.
Okay. Actually, let me tell you a quick story. Cause you just triggered in my head. Years ago, I was at a Visual Studio Reviewers workshop in Redmond. And, one of the guys from the server team, there was some server component to this. I don't remember why, but wanted to introduce me to a new guy on the team. And that guy was Satya Nadella.
Oh, cool.
And who I shook his hand. It's the only time I've ever actually interacted with him personally. And I shook his hand and I said, nice, fresh meat.
You know what? It's probably why he's CEO. He's like, I'm going to show that jerk. He's like, you just wait and see. And then
Okay. So top three wishes for Microsoft.
Yeah. Like, what do you want?
Oh, boy. Well, I mean, I've already kind of established that I think they're on the right path. You know, the interesting thing is this conversation should have been very different, that Microsoft shouldn't have made this right decision, right? It's funny because actually even the fresh meat thing makes sense when you think about it, that he's he is a new blood in a sense.
Yeah.
He's not part of the old school Microsoft. And I think it takes someone like him to drive the level of change that's occurring today at Microsoft. If nothing against Steve Ballmer, in fact, I'm a huge fan of Steve Ballmer, but he couldn't have made this happen. Mm-hmm. Not because there's something wrong with him, but because he was too associated with that kind of old school Microsoft mentality, the thing you see at the partners or whatever, where they still don't understand why it's okay.
Yeah.
Man, that's a tough one because, you know, the things I want for Microsoft are not things that I think they could achieve. I mean, I feel like they had an incredible value to add to mobile that was never realized because Windows Phone took off. I feel really bad about that. I feel that, and these are all consumery things too. It's terrible. I apologize. But, you know, like the Xbox One as a platform, I think is superior to the PlayStation. I don't understand the disparity in the sales there. It never made any sense to me.
Yeah.
But again, in those two areas, I think they've done, you dealt these cards and you don't like them, but okay, well, and they've made exactly the right moves. And I think that's what's interesting about it, because if we had this conversation under Steve Ballmer, I would have said, well, you know, maybe I wouldn't have done this, or maybe I wouldn't have bought a Quantiv, or maybe I would, you know, whatever. Yeah. I don't have anything specific, but I think the biggest problem, and this is not specific to Microsoft, but I cover Microsoft and I care more about Microsoft, is there is a problem, I think, in software development, in any company that does software development, where the next big thing is always the thing that gets all the hype and the attention and the bodies and the resources and whatever. There's a great need to kind of what I think of as like finish the job. And so you ship a product like, say, Windows 10 is a terrible example because they're continuously updating Windows 10, but you ship a product like, you know, a major new version of Windows. Historically at Microsoft, at that point, the A team would move on to the next version of Windows and the B team would work on the service pack.
But it's like you want the A team doing like fit and finish, right?
I often feel, and I've written, it's funny, over time I've written about this stuff. You know, when Microsoft had the reliability problem with the anniversary update last summer, I said, you know, maybe you need to stop and just work on reliability for a while, you know, kind of like you did back in 2002, I guess it was, when, or late 2001, when the problems happened with Windows XP and they started the Trustworthy Computing Initiative. Maybe you need to do something around reliability, you know, make sure this never happens again. They didn't like that suggestion, by the way. And I think it's fair to say that the current update that's shipping now for Windows 10 has seen a much greater level of success. And so they certainly adapted to the issue and addressed it head on. But I still feel like there's a fit and finish issue in the industry in general, you know, that we're always moving on to the next thing. Skype is a great example of a service that impacts my life on so many levels. And if someone were to call me right now, there are at least four devices in front of me, and there would be more, but I packed up my whole house. But there are four right here that will start ringing all at the same time. And I feel like this permeates so much of life that that needs to be better.
Yeah.
I bought a Google Home device, which is that little air freshener looking thing that you can talk to.
I like that.
And
the Glade Google Home.
Yeah. So if you say, so Google's trigger word for that is Hey Google or Okay Google. And hopefully I haven't just set off a bunch of these things, but when you say those things, the phone that you have and this device will kind of perk up because they're both listening, but the phone knows the other thing's there and it doesn't, it stops. And that's something that Skype needs.
Yeah.
Right. Now they do it to a degree, but it's not like it was 6 or 9 months ago where the thing would ring, 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 and would never stop ringing.
Yeah.
But there's still a period of time where they're all ringing. And I just, that to me is a finish the job thing, right?
Yeah.
They've got this, they've redone the back end. They took 3 years to do it. They just released the first version of the new mobile client and they're coming to Windows 10 and the Mac soon. I think it's beautiful. It's great work. Man, that little, that little.
I know what you're talking about. I think, you know, to Apple's credit, I think that they spend a lot of time on that. You know, like I do have a Mac that I use for the podcast, and then I have an iPhone and I have an Apple Watch. And like when a notification comes through, like if I'm actually actively on my laptop, like the notification comes on there. If I ignore it, then it comes through on my watch, unless my phone screen happens to be unlocked. Because if my phone screen is unlocked, it's like, oh, you must be using your phone. So it comes over there. So like, it's really like somebody really thought that out. And I guess it's a little bit easier for Apple because they have like, you know, five things total that they make.
Oh, right?
You know, so they, it's, it's, you know, they can just say like, well, let's look at every permutation of what the person could own out of these products. But they, it seems like they do a pretty good job. Like the stuff just tends to be intelligently designed between the devices by default. And it, and I think, you know, we actually had an episode on Project Rome recently. And it's, it feels like a lot of the scaffolding now, like it's coming from the bottom up. Like, you know, the stuff for developers is getting in, put in place. And it feels like a lot of these other things are going to improve dramatically over time then.
I'll give the Microsoft guys one little item of hope. You know, I do use an iPhone, and one of the ways that it fails me on a regular basis is when I go to the airport locally, Logan Airport, they have a free Wi-Fi, but you have to sign into it. The way that the iPhone works is that once you've made that connection, it saves the network like most devices do. There's no way to tell it not to, by the way. But when I get to the airport, I want to bring up my boarding pass or whatever so I can get through security, and I'm tapping on it and it's doing stuff. It's not working. What's happened is it's connected to Wi-Fi, but it hasn't done the authorization bit. It doesn't bring up that screen where you type in your whatever.
That's terrible.
Well, that means I'm offline. So in other words, by connecting to the free Wi-Fi it already knows about, it has put me offline. And then I have that spaz moment. And I think I do this every single time I go to the airport before I realize what it's doing. And you have to go in manually and say, forget this network.
Which you have to be connected to. Like, I could complain about this for about 20 minutes. To forget a network, you have to connect to it, which
it's like, it's ludicrous. I mean, in Windows 10, I mean, does have Wi-Fi. I don't want to screw up the connection here, but maybe I won't click on anything, but if you choose to connect to a network, there's a connect automatically checkbox. You can just uncheck it.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
When you can go in network list too and actually forget them. Yeah, because
you can forget it.
So what ended up happening to me is now, you know, on AT&T, I switched over to unlimited data. So now, just for like safety reasons, like I used to be kind of promiscuous connecting like different Wi-Fi networks, and it's like, well, I have so little data, I'm going to use Wi-Fi even if it kind of sucks and if I have to authenticate. And now I'm just like, you know what? I'm only going to use it at home, at work, and maybe like at my friend's house, and that's pretty much it. So you know,
I've done this exact thing.
Yeah. It keeps connecting and I'm like, no, forget. And it's just like super annoying.
Yeah. I was trying to bring up PayPal because I don't have an app. I just wanted to go to the site and it made me, type in my credentials, and I was typing it and I thought, wait a minute, I'm on a public network. You know, what am I doing? I'm typing in my PayPal credentials. That's the, you know.
Yeah, that's not good. It just feels like where when Apple doesn't add the fit and finish, like you just never get it.
It's either perfect or it's terrible.
Exactly. You know, and if it's but my point is like, if it's terrible, they're just like, well, we're never going to fix it. You will live with this for the rest of your life. Unless we come out with a completely different product where maybe it will be different. Probably not.
I hope you like your icons filling in from the top left, because they're never going to not do that. Now that I've said that, by the way, they're going to announce that next week. But if you use Android, you know, you can put an icon in the middle of the screen somewhere if you want. It doesn't matter. I mean, of course
that's why I really do miss Windows Phone from that perspective, because I had the 1520 and I felt like it was like the internet dashboard. Like it was just, I would turn on the phone and like everything I could think of, like, you know, current weather, all that, you know, up until like not too long ago on Apple, it was like always sunny and 73 degrees and it just drove me crazy.
And right. The calendar is always the one date.
Exactly. People would always tell me like, no, that's not true. And I'm like, open up your phone. I'm like, what does the weather icon say? And they're like, sunny and 73. I'm like, it's snowing and 5 degrees.
the beautiful comparison on the iPhone interface is to show a picture of Program Manager from Windows in 1993. And it is exactly the grid of icons that are static and don't do anything that you see in the iPhone today. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. So I'd love to have like a Windows phone with all the apps and everything. It would be really cool if they could do, there's just no way you could possibly, at least not that I know of, but make it so you could run iOS apps somehow, or, you know, like
they could do Android. In fact, They had that working. I keep saying they. Yeah, yeah. I know it's you, I guess, or whatever.
Well, but, it's still they to me.
Microsoft.
the other great they
in the sky.
Sub they.
But, you know, that's a problem for the app platform that Microsoft has, right? Because if you enable Android apps just to work seamlessly, and they did, why would anyone develop a Windows app, right? I mean, now you can just run Android. So let's just run Android. It's understandable why they killed it. But what a lot of people were looking for was the Windows interface with the apps.
Yeah.
Completely understandable, but
so one thing I haven't heard you talk about, and maybe I just missed it with all the shows that you're doing and everything, but the Cortana hardware, you know, there's the Harman Kardon speaker, and then I think there were some other ones announced, and then I even looked, I didn't realize it at first, but there's Skype calling support in there, and obviously there's the you can do things now where if you create a bot, you know, you can hook in a bot to a Cortana skill. Like there's a whole bunch of cool stuff going on in the back end. So like, what do you think of all that? What are your thoughts?
My only issue with that stuff is that it's late to the game, right? If we could go back in time to the day that Amazon announced the Echo and said, companies are going to come up with these digital assistants and they're going to be in these appliances and they're going to be in your car and they're going to be on your phone and they'll be on your computer. Who do you think's going to get that working, right? Mm-hmm. I think Microsoft, Google, and maybe Apple would have been in that conversation, right? And then Amazon came along and screwed everything up. I still don't understand how it happened. It's amazing how successful and popular that thing is. Yeah. Okay, well, it happened, and they have a skills system similar to Cortana skills, right? So third parties can come in and add their skills to the Alexa devices and make them more powerful and make them more useful to users and everything. And apparently that works fine. But I don't think they have a long-term story because there are only two companies on Earth, frankly, that have access to the AI and the machine learning and the deep, frankly, computer science skills that are required for this kind of thing, and that's Microsoft and Google.
Yeah.
So when Google announced Google Home last year in May, I thought, this is it. It's the end. And the version that they shipped, the first version in November or whenever that was not very good, actually. It kind of surprised people how behind it was. But they've moved very quickly to improve it. And today I'd say, and of course with the stuff they announced at IO, I think it's going to be very, very interesting. Hands free calling, you know, with understanding each user, up to six users in a house. It's incredible.
Yeah.
So I talked, you know, last year there was a lot of kind of hand wringing around Microsoft and Cortana. What are they doing? And I talked to them. I think it was Ryan Gavin. He's a guy that used to be on the Internet Explorer team, but he was at CES and we talked about Cortana, and I asked him about being behind and whether that mattered. And he indicated that that wasn't super important, that this is a long game, and that the thing that will put Microsoft over the top is Cortana becoming essential, right? Mm-hmm. If you think about what most people probably use Alexa for today, they walk in the room and say, what's the weather? Or, tell me a joke, start some music playing, you know, it's fine. It's not something I would spend money on personally. It's goofy and it's kind of a cute little parlor trick, but it's not essential, right? Google does all that stuff too. Cortana does as well. But Microsoft has these productivity services that everyone actually uses: Office 365, Exchange, your calendar, your email, and so on. And so it's work and it's home. And the Cortana team's basic shtick or whatever was that we're going to be essential. And what essential means is that if Alexa stops working tomorrow and I can't get the weather by asking her the weather, it's like, whatever. I can pick up a phone. But the integration between that device, hopefully whatever it is in your PC and your phone, which is something Google can do too, by the way, and is doing, is part of the deal. The ability to hand off something and say, actually for her to say proactively, hey, by the way, the traffic's really tough today.
I like that.
You might want to leave now to make it home at the usual time.
Yeah, right. Some of those proactive features might actually be the most useful.
Yeah. So I my only concern for Cortana and for that whole ecosystem is just that they're behind. The Cortana skill set was supposed to come out, I think, 6 months earlier than it finally did, but it's out now. Great. Mm-hmm. We don't know too much about these devices. We know about the Harman Kardon. HP has kind of showed off something. I'm sure there'll be more in time for the holidays. Google has a head start here. Amazon obviously has a head start here. Amazon, I think, is going to be held back by the car stuff and by the phone stuff. You know, they're just don't. It's hard when you're not built into the system to to have that benefit. That's going to be a problem for Microsoft too. So they have a mobile client, obviously, but unless you really go to great pains on Android and you can't do it on iOS, it's not really deeply integrated with the system. So that's the concern there. But I think they're going to be one of the players because they're one of the few companies that can do it.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting, you know, so my role, I work with, primarily manufacturing ISVs. And, mm-hmm. But if you look in, I mean, if you think about different industries too, I mean, we always think about the consumer thing, right? Like that's sitting at home.
Right.
But I think there's a whole bunch of interesting industrial applications as well. And for businesses, you know, to drop, you know, $200 on a device that makes it so that workers that, you know, are wearing gloves or, you know, yes. are in otherwise doing something else that they can't put that down. Like that's nothing. I mean, that's effectively zero. This
ties nicely into that question that came up earlier, which is what are you going to do if Microsoft drops all the consumer stuff? And I kind of joked, I'm probably going to retire on that day.
Yeah.
But this is perfect because this is exactly right. What you just said is exactly right. There's a rich business to be had there. There's no doubt about it. They can be very successful. It may not be successful as I'm picking up my iPhone and talking to Siri about the weather or, you know, that kind of thing. And I'm sort of in that world a little bit. Right. And so I kind of care about that stuff personally, but yes, that's a huge world. Microsoft could cut a deal with BlackBerry, which makes QNX, which is the in-car system in like all cars, basically. Mm-hmm. And what if that became the native interface for that?
Yeah.
Most people wouldn't even understand that they were interfacing with Cortana. It wouldn't actually matter. I'm sure Ford would want you to say, hey, Ford, or, you know, hey, Taurus, or whatever. You know, yeah. It doesn't really matter. So that's a huge success story. I'm making that up. An example of a huge success story that could happen. And it's not really consumer facing, right? To the consumer, Microsoft and maybe even Cortana are not the brands that are being promoted. It's not as in your face as like an Apple logo. Uh-huh. But it doesn't mean it's not a viable business. It doesn't mean it's not an awesome business.
Yeah.
It just means that I'm going to retire.
Yeah. Since I bought my car, I have the Sync 2 system. I don't have the nice Sync 3 system. But since I bought it, there's been one update. And that one update was to make it so that you could push the hands-free button and use Siri.
Nice.
They pushed out an update for that. It took 2 hours.
So the one you have, is that the Microsoft version? Is 2 Microsoft still?
It's Microsoft branded, yes.
Yeah. And then 3, they went to, I think they went to BlackBerry,
yeah.
right? Or
so, yeah. I think so, something like that. Yeah. Yeah, because in the Sync 3 system, it has a capacitive screen. Like the whole thing is, you know, indistinguishable. Mine has the resistive screen. But what I found anyway, you know, I have this big fancy screen there and, you know, I have a phone mount and I mean, that provides me everything anyway.
Right.
So, I mean, that's the reality. I remember it was a few years ago looking, you know, going car shopping and I said, hey, you know, I want a big screen with the GPS built in. And they're just like, we don't have any cars in the lot with that. I'm like, what? They're like, everybody's using their phones
now.
Everyone
uses their phones.
Yeah, yeah. And at the time I was like right on the fringe, you know, I was using like a Garmin and it was nice having that dedicated.
See, I actually like having the big screen in the dashboard because it's a nice place to rest your phone. And then you can use the, you know, the map you actually want to use.
Put some Velcro over it and stick your phone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just black out the rest of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. What else you got, Carl?
One of the things I wanted to bring it back to a little bit more personally to you is you're looking at the team that you've surrounded yourself at, like throughout.com. You have Brad Sams and Mary Jo Foley and Rafael Rivera. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you would call it personality defects or whatever. But
yep, I would. Yeah. I don't know where you're going with this, but yes.
But I noticed that each of them has a very strong kind of humor that's pointed against each other quite often. Is that what it takes to work with Paul Theriot?
Yeah, it is. Actually, that's amazing that you caught that because this is not a joke. My greatest relationships have come out of adversity. I told you what I said when I met Satya Nadella. That's how I am to people. It's awful being me. There's a guy, in fact, at that same community college where I started the newsletter and all that stuff. This is literally 22 years ago-ish, 23 years ago. There was a guy I met who were standing looking over a computer and they're working on the website. And I knew the guys who were kind of involved with the web stuff. And the web was brand new at the time too. Mm-hmm. So it's a website. So there's a picture of the community college. It's got this giant sunburst thing on it. And I said, that looks terrible. What idiot made that? And the guy next to me says, I did. And I said, hi, I'm Paul. And he says, hi, I'm Joe. We've been friends ever since. And that guy worked at Microsoft for 15 years. I stayed with him every single time I visited Redmond, for 15 years until he moved. We've been friends ever since. And you know, I never did this on purpose. I'm just a terrible human being, but the way people react to me has become almost like a test. Like every once in a while, you'll meet someone. It could be a waitress in a restaurant. It could be a person at a meetup. It could be just a person on a plane. Same thing. You know, the way that people react to me, I find to be hilarious, you know, and depending on how they go, like we're going to, you know, we're either going to, that's going to be the end of that, or we're going to be best.
So there's a test like immediately.
I don't do it on purpose, but there is a test. Yeah. Weird.
No, I'm kind of the same way. So I can totally relate to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You guys are awesome though. I love all you guys. You guys are doing really great work. You know, I've talked to Mary Jo Foley in person a couple times and told her too, you know, she has, you know, like her keywords or the code names. And I said, yeah, you know, that's helpful to me sometimes. Cause you know, Microsoft's such a big company, you know, internally.
She's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, internally we have this fire hose and you guys are able to distill, you know, some of these things down, and it helps me even being an employee here and know like where to look and what kinds of things that, I should be looking
at. Yeah. No, I'm lucky, you know, I'm antisocial enough that working at home is the right move for me, but sometimes you want to get out and be with people. And I don't know what it's like for you guys exactly, but if you go to events, I'm sure you understand this. It's a lot like a family reunion in a way where you see all these people that you know and are familiar with and hang around. And it's not just, I've been lucky at my little company to surround myself with these people, but even the broader group of people who do what I do for the most part it's kind of a great crew, and we all look forward to seeing each other. And, you know, we ping each other privately as well and make fun of each other offline. But we, you know, it's great when it was an event like Build, you show up and it's, you know, Brad's there obviously and Raphael might be there, but it's also this kind of wider group of people that we've known, you know, in many cases for almost 20 years. So,
yeah,
it's great. It's not a bad way to do things.
Yeah. I went to that one at Build and it's like, about 50% of the people there, I saw before. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah. That's I love that stuff. And then every once in a while I'll go to a kind of a goofy non-Microsoft event, or I'll go to like show up at like VM World or something, or, I went to VeeamON in New Orleans. And you recognize the event. It's exactly the same kind of thing that I go to all the time, but all the people are different. And then you feel like kind of an outsider.
Well, it's kind of awkward because it's just like, I guess it's just me, you know, unless you want to try to get in one of those other groups and interact with those people.
Yeah, what's the Microsoft idiot doing here, you know?
Well, that happens, you know, that happens with employees here, right? So we go to like AWS events and Google events, and usually those companies are pretty nice. You know, every once in a while we'll have people register for a particular event, and then, you know, like they get contacted as like, no, you're not coming to this event. But most of the time, you know, they're like happy to have us there. And that's pretty cool too. You know, it's cool to see, you know, the cooperation between companies and.
You know, you guys, Microsoft, I mean, is, you know, competing and cooperating with a lot of different companies, right? Yeah. So Apple, you asked if Apple and Microsoft are competitors, and they are in some levels, but they're also partners on some levels. They're not maybe great partners, but they, you know, Microsoft brought Office to iOS and Apple puts that up in their keynote stage. It's a big deal for them.
Yeah.
You know, and so it you know, it goes both ways.
Yeah, I just love Apple plus Microsoft. I don't know what it is, but it feels like it's like, you know, it feels like they compete or complete each other. You know what I mean? Yes. I don't know what it is. I don't know why I have this fascination with the
yin and the yang.
Exactly. It's like it's like different, but, you know, complementary and
sure.
Yeah. Any other questions, Carl?
I think we could ask questions all day, but we should give Paul his afternoon back.
Didn't you have a question about bacon, Carl?
Yeah, so I saw there was a conversation on Twitter this morning where you learned an amazing new way to make bacon, and I was wondering if you had a preference.
Everything useful that I know I've learned from my wife. So, you know, we're selling the house, you know, that's why it looks like this. And so I went in this morning to make breakfast, and there's a little note hanging on the oven that says, do not use the oven. So I was like, okay, I wanted to make bacon. Is there a way I can do this without, you know, spraying myself with oil by frying it? And she says, yeah, just cook it in the microwave. I'm like, I've been on this earth for 50 years and I have no idea what you're talking
about.
Well,
like I've seen devices to cook it in the microwave, but like, what, you just put it on a plate to microwave it?
Yep.
The infomercials told me that that's not good because, and then it just sits in like a pool of grease.
Well, okay. So the pool of grease is, there's nothing wrong with it. We also have misguided information about health and nutrition and stuff like that. But this is actually perfect for me because I don't like overcooked bacon. Like in the United States, a lot of people have like really crispy bacon. It's basically like a charbroiled.
Yeah.
Briquette or something.
I'm in that group. So, you know, I can speak.
Yeah, no, it's very, no, it's typical here, but I actually like bacon to be softer and not as cooked. Mm-hmm. So the way I cook it in the oven, but I don't cook it that long. So I only cooked it, I think it was 3 minutes. It was perfect. I couldn't believe it.
Okay. Life changing.
This is a game changer.
The more you know, we need like that infographic.
Exactly. What is this miraculous tool that's been in my kitchen all this time?
Yeah. The microwave. Okay. So I have a quick Azure pick of the week, which is the cloud platform roadmap. So this kind of goes into more Microsoft transparency. So this is pretty cool. They are publishing some of the features that they're working on for Azure, some of the things that they've shipped, some of the things that are in public preview. And then I think one thing that got canceled, it's interesting that category is there, but hopefully that'll get built up over time, or hopefully not. I don't know. But this is pretty cool. Like we've been pushing for this, and it's interesting seeing partner reactions, because partners always want kind of like the inside scoop, like, yeah, give me the secret stuff, and like less and less is secret. And it's like, oh, it's at this public website, and if you go to GitHub, all that's there. Yep. So, you know, they have a hard time dealing with that, but this is great, at least from a high level. Some of the upcoming features, and I know we've done this for Edge, but now this is happening for Azure all up. So just more transparency. So very cool to see. So I'm excited about that. And then Carl, what do you have for the dev tip of the week?
I have a website called lorempixel.com. So you're familiar with lorem ipsum being the placeholder text you might use on a web page or an application to simulate actual paragraphs. Well, if you don't want to come up with a picture, but you need like a very specific size, like 640 by 480 or 300 by 200, they have a very simple URL-based way to just plug those numbers in. You get a random picture back. If you need like a specific industry or topic, they do have some like animals, food, nature, nightlife, sports, where you can plug some of those keywords in and get very specific ones. And you can even like, if you see one you like, there's a way to even ID that one and just use that all the time. So if you need some placeholder images for a website that you're using, you don't want to just use some cats that you found on the internet, like most people do, check out lorempixel.com. It's pretty easy to use.
This is awesome. And there's a little, the generator at the bottom is pretty cool. You just set the sliders, what type of picture you want, and boom. Okay. I like it, Carl. That's very cool. Okay, Paul. So there's a game that we play in the show. So what I need you to do, I need you to pick a number between 1 and 4 inclusive. See, we normally, like, we have really geeky listeners, so I have to say inclusive.
Gotcha.
So pick a number and you let me know what it is.
You want me to say it out loud?
Yes, you say it out
Not
loud.
Not through the brain.
Not, okay. Yeah.
3.
3. Okay. Would you rather have a chicken that lays golden eggs or have your very own Jolly Green Giant?
Oh, definitely the chicken.
Yeah, I don't. Some of these are really easy. Okay, Carl, why don't you pick a number?
I'll pick number 1.
Number 1. Would you rather have eyebrows that make a complete circle around your face? Or
I think I saw that at like those beard competitions.
Yeah. Yep. Eyebrows that make it. Well, you have the beard, so like it's not much of a stretch. Okay. Or
just keep going.
Yeah. Or have flat eyelashes that stick out 10 inches and cannot be trimmed.
Oh, I'd have to go with the circular. Yeah.
Oh, boy,
that's a good call. It's a game for kids, Paul.
It's like a horror movie.
Yeah. Okay. So Paul, where should people go to find you?
Well, Thurrott.com, obviously. Yep. Not so obviously as how it's spelt, unfortunately. I lobbied very hard against using this name. I just felt it was the most awful URL.
Just double a whole bunch of letters in there.
Yeah, Thurrott.com. And then the same name on Twitter, where I often will just hold court all day long and make fun of everything. So
that sounds like somebody I want to follow.
Yeah. If you enjoy that kind of thing.
Perfect. And Carl, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Carl Schweitzer.
You can find me at ytechie.com or on Twitter at twitter.com/ytechie. So, Paul, thank you so much for coming on here and talking about everything. And
sure.
And it was so cool kind of meeting somebody I would consider, I guess, a little bit of a personal hero of mine.
Yikes.
Yeah.
That's too bad.
No, so I love your work.
Well, thank you. I mean, thank you for having me on. I'm happy to do it.